Thomas Sharp's a bad guy.
Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. In our next conversation with author Brian Stutzman, we're going to talk about the outcome of Joseph and Hiram's murder trial. Is it true that this was justice served, or was it more of a kangaroo court? We're going to talk more about that with Brian, so you won't want to miss this. Check out our conversation.
So the county commissioner seat the jury, and they're hearing different cases. So the People versus Levi Williams comes out, okay? And the defense attorneys come to the judge and say, we want a new jury. And Lamburn says, he says, what do you mean you want a new jury? This is a properly seated jury picked by the county commissioners. And he said, well, the county commissioners are not Mormon, but they were elected by Mormons. And so they're tainted. And this jury is tainted because of their connection to the county commissioners who were elected by the Latter-day Saints majority, because they were being outvoted again, this block party, a block voting type thing. And the judge says, well, you know, we never heard of this. And Lambert says, show me a legal precedent where you can unseat a seated jury for a trial like this. And the defense says, well, there's never been a case like this. There's no precedence because there's never been a case like this. And the judge, Judge Young, goes along with it and dismisses the properly seated jury. And then they say, well, who should we have here on the jury? And the defense says, well, let's get the people in the audience. Well, who was in the audience? We know that there was no Mormons from Nauvoo. They were almost all anti-Mormons. So they randomly pick people from the audience. It's a two-story building. The audience is normally up in the rafters on the second in the balcony, and they just pick people and come see them.
Now, why did they dismiss the jury again?
Because the defense asked for it. Can you believe that?
Wow.
It's never happened before. And it's a capital case. It's a murder case. So the charge is, though, it's not for the murder. I should say it's not a capital case because they could have been hung if they were convicted. It was for the conspiracy to commit murder. And Lambert goes on and says, the legal theory I'm going to use here is, I don't have to prove that any of these five were at the jail or even pulled the trigger. For conspiracy, all I have to show is, and he uses this term, they were the soul of the movement. They were the ringleaders.
Thomas Sharp certainly was one of them.
Well, the defense, so they go through six witnesses for the prosecution. That by far the most important is Eliza Graham, the 18-year-old. She's now 19. She moved back to Nauvoo. And she tells in great detail what she saw as a waitress at the Warsaw House Hotel that night, June 27th, when Thomas Sharp comes in, asks for a drink of water, and Grover and Davis and all the others, Alders comes, and they're bragging. And she vividly remembers, in fact, she mimics their actions. And they said, well, so-and-so did this, and then he ate. And later on, I mentioned Charles Hay, his son, John Hay, became the Secretary of State. In 1867, he writes this article for the Atlanta magazine. And it's about the murder and the trial of Joe Smith. Now, he's only 6 years old when this happens, but he writes his big community memoir. And he says, Eliza Graham remembered a lot. Unfortunately, she remembered too much, and she was discredited. That's what he writes in his article. And she was discredited, and they call 16 witnesses for the defense. Okay, 16 witnesses for the defense. Not one of the five stood trial, or that were standing trial, testified. And they all said, oh, I didn't see anything, I was there. Well, Anne Graham Fleming, who was the aunt that ran the restaurant, the hotel, the Warsaw House, she's the star witness. And she says, you know, I was there that night, and I don't even remember what my niece Eliza is saying. You know, I didn't see any of these people here. Now, you got to look at the context that Anne was under. She lived in Warsaw. She ran the restaurant and the hotel. Who were her clients? They were the mob. They were the mob's friends. She didn't want to alienate. She would be out of business. She might even be shot herself if she testified against her friends and her patrons, okay? Well, 6 days later, the verdict came back not guilty. The defense said, if you convict these five, you've got to convict hundreds, if not thousands, of people who felt the same way. These guys just happened to be five that said it. But other people were saying it too. You can't convict these five for being the ringleaders, the soul of the movement, against Joseph and Hiram because you'd have to convict hundreds, thousands. And the jury bought it. Of course, they were biased. Well, the Nauvoo paper didn't even write about the verdict. It was a sham. Everybody knew it. It was a miscarriage of justice. There was not even a trial held for Hiram. The prosecution didn't show up for his murder. Okay, so in the end, we have two dead leaders, 5 men acquitted, and a trial, and nothing happens. Now, it becomes important for these people later on in life because it allows them to lead normal lives.
All right, so we were talking about the trial. Let's back up just a tiny bit and tell us what was Thomas Sharpe's reaction in the newspaper.
Okay. Well, almost immediately, this is before the trial. This is like in the end of June 1844. The martyrdom happened June 27th. Thomas Sharpe came back to Warsaw, and after his night of drinking and bragging at the Warsaw House, within the next couple of days, he writes a 32-page pamphlet and publishes it in the Warsaw Signals press office, and he defends the martyrdom and defends the action. See, there was a political thinking called reserved rights. And it basically said that as a small community, if the government doesn't take action, the citizens have reserved rights, the right to take action among themselves. Well, in the first week of July of 1844, right in his newspaper, he writes about the martyrdom and he defends the actions that they did of the mob. And he says, we regret, and we still regret. He starts out by saying, we, the citizens of Warsaw, are a law-abiding community. And we regret, we still regret the actions we had to take. We didn't participate in murder. We participated in extrajudicial executions. And anybody familiar with the facts would agree that we were in the right. And he publishes this for the whole world to see.
Wow. A lynching.
A lynching. A legal lynching. And then, as we talked about later on, the trial was not for who pulled the trigger, but who were the soul of the movement. You can't say that Thomas Sharpe was not the soul of the movement. Well, years later, somebody asked Thomas Sharpe, so, did you kill Joseph Smith? And his answer was, well, the jury said not. Acquittal meant that these leaders, these people, could go on with normal lives. Thomas Sharpe, for instance, when Warsaw kind of incorporated and became a town, he was elected the first mayor of Warsaw in 1853.
This is after his...
This is after his...
Now, before you go there, I do want to ask, what was Governor Ford's reaction to the verdict?
He writes about it in his history. I think he thinks it's a miscarriage of justice. Okay, but what are you going to do?
Yeah.
The saints already know that it's farcical. They knew that they would never do.
I mean, would it have helped if you know, say, John Taylor or others had testified?
They probably would have been killed.
You think so?
The mob put 1,000 people outside of Carthage to prevent anybody from coming in during trial week.
Mm.
They were not going to let the Mormon people come. They kill them first.
So it was a total kangaroo court?
It's a kangaroo court.
Wow.
So Thomas Sharpe goes on, becomes mayor three times.
Three-time mayor.
He becomes a judge. Here's a. He's not convicted, okay?
But everybody
knows this.
Okay. Was he actually in the mob, or?
He led the charge. He was there at Golden's Point. And says, "Let's." Frank Worrell just sent this note that says, "Now's the time to do the deed. Let's go on, boys."
Now, I've heard some rumors that John C. Bennett was in the mob or helped organize it. Do you have anything on that? No.
Well, I don't even think he was in the area by that time. He'd gone back east.
Okay.
I don't think he returned. I don't know.
Okay.
Can't speak to that. So Thomas Sharpe becomes a judge. Again, he's married to Hannah Wilcox, the rich lady. And she dies, and he remarries. He remarries Franklin Worrell's widow. Now, Franklin was the guy who wrote the note, "Now's the time to do the deed," at the jail. And I'll tell you about his murder. It's really interesting. Because O.P. Rockwell shot him.
Orrin
Porter Rockwell.
Oh, really?
So let me get to that in just a second. So Sharpe marries Ann Lawton, or Sarah Ann Lawton Worrell, later in life after Hannah dies, and the widow of Franklin Worrell, and her sister has married Thomas Gregg, So Thomas Gregg and Thomas Sharp are now brother-in-laws. Thomas Gregg writes in 1880 The History of Hancock County, brother-in-law to Thomas Sharp. Later, he writes a book called The Prophet of Palmyra. People, historians, go to Hancock County, the history of Hancock County, and says, oh, well, this seems pretty unbiased, the history of what happened to the saints. Well, his brother-in-law is Thomas Sharp. You think it's unbiased? Thomas Sharp dies at age 75. He has a stroke. He's in a wheelchair. And his health goes really, really bad. He's gaining, one account says, a pound a day. And he dies, and he's buried 1 mile north of the Carthage jail. And with Sarah and Hannah there. Okay. Now, the Carthage jail was made from rock from the Sonora Quarry, which was south of Nauvoo. The John Wilcox house that Thomas Sharp married Hannah moved into, the one that's for sale right now, is made from the same rock, from the same quarry. That house became Thomas Sharp's house. Same stone from Carthage jail as Thomas Sharp's. So I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah.
And that house is still for sale right now. I told you, for $170,000, and you can buy it. And it was built in 1838, and Thomas Sharp lived there for a time. Not during the trial. He moved up across the street from the Warsaw house. So let me tell you about Franklin Worrell. War Frank, as Thomas Sharp called him. After the trial, after the 1846, there was a new sheriff elected, and he was a Jack. He wasn't a Mormon, but he was friendly to Mormons, Jacob Bakentos. Okay. Bakentos is in Carthage, and he comes to visit a friend just in north Warsaw. And the word gets out, the sheriff's there. He spends the night, and he gets up the next morning, and there's a mob forming, a Warsaw mob. Bakentos gets on his horse and rides north. The mob chases him. A couple people in the mob break free and go forward, and they're gaining on Bakentos. A couple guys on horses, and they're just marching at full speed. Okay. About this time, there was a lot of anti-Mormon activity in Hancock County. Mobs had gone out and burned Mormon houses out in outlying areas. 44 were burned in one day. The Nauvoo charter had been dissolved. We had no Nauvoo militia, no Nauvoo legion, but Brigham Young ordered some people to go and help these saints move back into Nauvoo for protection. So there's this caravan of saints coming, and in the group were Orrin Porter Rockwell and a guy named Return Riding Remington. I'm having some grandchildren. I told my kids to name their kids Return Rider. They didn't like that. What a name, Return Rider Remington. Okay, Remington was his last name. And they're moving the saints, and they look up over this ridge, and here comes Sheriff Bakentos riding, and there's these guys chasing him. And Bakentos recognizes that these are LDS people, Mormons, and they see Orrin Porter Rockwell, Opie Rockwell, and he yells out, and he says, I'm the sheriff, and I'm being chased. I deputize you. Please protect me. And OP looks at his Return Riding and says, well, there's two of them up for lead. You take the one on one side and I'll take the one on the other. And they shoot, and OP Rockwell, he hits his guy, and Return Riding misses his. The guy falls down onto the ground dead. The sheriff comes and thanks him. The cart comes, different people come and load up this dead man and haul him away back to Warsaw. And it was Frank Worrell that got killed. Okay.
Wow.
Frank Worrell, the guard at the jail that writes, now's the time to do the deal, is shot by O.P. Rockwell. It's his first confirmed kill. O.P. Rockwell said, Orrin Porter Rockwell said, I've never killed a man that didn't deserve to die. Later on, they said, well, how come you hit your guy and Return Riding Remington missed his? And Rockwell said, that's easy. These guys were riding the horses. They were bouncing up and down. Return Riding aimed for his head at the wrong time, and the guy's head got below the bullet. He says, I aim for the belt buckle. He says, always aim for the belt buckle. Well, that was an account. That event inflamed the anti-Mormons. Thomas Sharp the next day writes in his paper, "Oh, poor Frankie was one of our best citizens."
Now, why was he after the sheriff?
Because he was a Jack.
Because the sheriff was a Jack Mormon.
He was friendly, and they wanted to get rid of him.
Hmm.
They thought maybe they could get, if they killed him, they could get an anti-Mormon sheriff.
So the sheriff wasn't about to press charges against Rockwell because he saved his life.
No, he was acquitted of charges for self-defense.
Oh, so he was charged.
I believe he was.
Okay.
And I have the account in my book. But he was deputized, so he was legal to protect the sheriff.
Mm-hmm.
So Thomas writes the next day, "Poor Frankie's one of our best citizens." And he says, "You know, we call on our friends in Missouri, citizens, we can't let this go on." And he capitalizes. He says, "Revenge, revenge, revenge is the word. We got to make things right." And that leads to the Battle of Nauvoo, which Thomas Sharp is a leader in, a couple-day bombardment, and the expulsion of the Saints later on in the Quincy Committee. So Frank Worrell's, like I said, widow later on marries Thomas Sharp.
Wow.
She was the first school teacher in Warsaw, by the way, and a pretty famous historical figure.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with author Brian Stutzman. In our next conversation, we're going to talk about a chilling conversation with Dan Jones, an early church member, right outside the Carthage jail the day before the murder.
Dan Jones is at the jail the night before the martyrdom, June 26, 1844. Franklin Worrell says to him, he says, "We've worked too hard to get Joseph here. We are never going to let him leave Carthage alive. And if you know what's good for you, what's best for you, you'd better leave too." He said that to Dan Jones.
If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please support Gospel Tangents and become a subscriber. For just $5 a month, go to patreon.com/gospeltangents and you can hear the entire interview. And you can also get transcripts available in either our Amazon website, or if you want to give the money to me and not Amazon, please subscribe on my website at gospeltangents.com and you can click the yellow subscribe button. Of course, we're also on Facebook, Twitter, and all the other places. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes at tinyurl.com/gospeltangents. And don't forget to click here to subscribe on YouTube, here for a transcript, and over here we've got some more of our great videos. Thanks again for listening.